The week is at its end here on The Commute. Happy Friday. On today's podcast, Savannah State grad Asha Gilbert shares insights on Orange Crush and the continued conundrum the beach party presents for both participants and Tyvee officials and law enforcement. Also, an excerpt from an interview with Chris Carson, the national president of the League of Women's Voters. The league's top priority right now is political redistricting reform, and Carson explains how establishing an independent commission to draw district lines has worked in California. The Commute is presented by National Office Systems, your local source for beautiful, comfortable, and functional office designs and furniture. National Office Systems has been serving Savannah since 1985 and is the exclusive provider of Dirt Modular Interiors and Herman Miller Office Furniture. Learn more at NatOffSys, that's NatOffSys.com. Here come the horns. Welcome to The Commute, a production of the Savannah Morning News and SavannahNow.com. I'm Adam Van Brimmer, the editorial page editor of the publication, and along with web producer Zach Dennis, we bring you this podcast every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. Our mission is to bring you insights on the news that is impacting us here in Savannah and in the surrounding area. Thank you for listening. We start today's episode with a conversation with Asha Gilbert. Asha is a new hire here at the Savannah Morning News, and she assists producer Zach in creating and managing our digital offerings, including this podcast. Asha is also a relatively recent Savannah State grad, a young African-American woman, and a past attendee of Orange Crush. Asha, last Saturday was Orange Crush, the annual gathering that largely is made up of Savannah State students, but I know through the years there's been a move that it is a larger gathering for African-American youth.
Yes.
Southeast Georgia and beyond. It was last Saturday at Tyvee. It was not uneventful. It never is. But it has once again stoked discussion on how the city of Tyvee Island, how the Georgia Highway Patrol, how the authorities handle this event, and do they treat it differently than other large gatherings of people in the state of Georgia. And I know as a Savannah State alum, and a Orange Crush alum.
Well, I don't know about that. I've gone a few times, so I want to say an alum. Okay.
Right. But you do bring a perspective to this that pretty interesting. And in the past, what really kind of stood out to you about how the weekend works and how it's approached, whether it's by the attendees, the local authorities, the local residents? If you had to kind of sum it up, give it a summation, how would you do it?
For students, I believe because it's so close to the end of the spring semester, it's kind of the end of the year party.
Right.
It's the last time to kind of get together with your friends and get together with everybody that you've been to school with, because some people don't go to summer school. Some people aren't in Savannah during the summer, unless, of course, they're off campus residents. So it's really the last time for a huge get together. Of course, at the beach, which a lot of people do love the beach here in Savannah or Tyvee Island. When it comes to law enforcement, I believe there's already an expectation for things to go south, for things to go left. I do believe that it is important to have a higher amount of law enforcement officials out there due to the increase of people out there. But I guess my huge question is, do they do that every time there is a huge amount of people coming out there? For the residents, I can definitely understand where some of them come from when it comes to the trash and, again, the safety. I do know in the past, trash has been a huge issue. People just leaving their red cups, cigarette butts, or whatever the case is on the beach. And I definitely understand where that can be an issue, especially if the tide comes up and that goes back into the ocean. But I feel like there have been things. Savannah State usually has a cleanup crew that comes out. There are other residents in Tyvee Island that do go out there, volunteer, and clean up. And I think that definitely assists. And I guess Orange Crush not having that bad of an aftermath, in a sense, if that makes sense.
Right. Let's stick with law enforcement. Obviously, it's a heavy presence. It
Super
usually
heavy.
Involves some kind of roadblock. Or narrowing it down to one lane, which we did see last Saturday. South Beach usually has a strong law enforcement presence. I do think, from my experience, it's a relatively passive presence. I certainly have been to Orange Crush before and saw things that were clearly in violation of the beach laws that were just basically allowed to happen just as long as it stayed within control. So I don't think it's necessarily easy for law enforcement to do their job, whether it's with Orange Crush or whether it's 4th of July is another big one, or the Labor Day fireworks. But if you had to kind of critique the law enforcement presence and what could make it better, what could make it more welcoming, what could maybe ease the tension, what would you recommend?
When I have personally run, I've never really had an interaction with police unless it was a house party on the beach, which, of course, you're not really supposed to do. You're not supposed to have a large amount of residents in a house that you're renting for a house party because of damages and other things. But while on the beach, usually there hasn't been much. I haven't personally had a lot of interaction with police officers. So I think on that note, kind of staying back a little bit and just letting people have fun and not feeling like they're hovering over you is something that law enforcement officials do very well. The only issue I have is law enforcement this time, Tybee Island police saying, "We've arrested the promoter of Orange Crush. It's canceled." You know, and I didn't really like that post because there's multiple parties for Orange Crush, whether it be at Island Breeze in Savannah, little bars on the beach or a walkway through the beach. There's multiple parties, and to say it's canceled because of one person, I feel like that wasn't the best route to take because obviously, you know, still, I don't know if it was thousands or hundreds or the amount of people still came out. And I think with law enforcement, there should be better communication, if possible, to make it easier for there not to be tension. So as a young Black woman or a young Black male, if law enforcement is always saying, "Oh, it's canceled, you know, whatever, and it's a public beach," I'm coming in to the beach with tension. I'm coming into the beach thinking, "Oh, well, law enforcement doesn't want me here." And me could be because I'm Black. Me could be because I'm a college student. Me could be because I'm under the age of 25, which I hope most people were under the age of 25 going out there, hopefully, maybe. And I think it has to be communication between people and law enforcement officials, especially college students, because you don't want people to come in with tension already. Yeah.
And I think that goes back to what the city of Tybee has been wrestling with for probably about the last 10 years is they encouraged for a couple of years later, they tried to identify, okay, who is kind of organizing this? Can we encourage them to take out the permitting and do the proper thing? And of course, that became impossible because it's not an official event. It is it is spread by word of mouth or by social media. This is the day we're all going out there. And then so Tybee then kind of takes the tact of, okay, we're going to make alcohol on the beach illegal 2 weeks out of the year. And that hasn't proven to be very wise either. I'm going to ask you, I'm going to say, okay, you just got elected to Tybee City Council. How would you deal with the situation?
Me as a person, and also me being a young Black woman, or even if I was an older Black woman, I would not vote in favor of the alcohol ban, because basically you're putting these kids into a group, and because a lot of these kids are minorities, Black, Spanish, or whatever have you, that are coming out to that beach, it puts a negative connotation on Tybee Island. And when you do that again, you're already bringing tension to the field before anybody has even arrived. Because again, you do have July 4th. Again, you do have St. Patty's. Again, there are multiple festivals on Tybee Island all the time. And to say when the two weekends where majority of Black students or Black people are coming out there to say there's going to be an alcohol ban, I would not vote in favor of that because it just puts that negative connotation on Tybee Island as a whole.
Is there anything that the city government can or should do to try to?
To be honest, I'm really not sure. Because it's an unofficial party, at a public beach, I'm not really sure what the government can do, because I feel like, or the local government can do, or law enforcement officials can do, because if you say I can't come here, and it looks like it's based off of my color, my age, and my education level, whatever have you, it's going to make me want to go more. From the post that I saw when Tybee Island posted that, you know, the promoter got arrested, if you go under those comments, a lot of people were like, it doesn't matter, we're still going to go. And now we want to go even more because you said it was canceled. So I think the best, in my personal opinion, the best route would be playing into it and maybe, again, try to get with, I'm not sure who you would get with, because there's so many promoters, different promoters for different parts of that weekend. So, because Orange Crush isn't just the beach party, you know? And I just thinking about it, I believe that there's a lot of revenue that is brought in by people coming out to Tybee, the hotels being booked, the gas stations being used for gas and cigarettes and everything parking else like meters. That. Parking meters, you know, that type of thing. That's huge. So I understand where it can be negative. Thankfully, this year, I don't believe I've heard that anybody got seriously hurt or anything like that. No reports of shootings and things. And I believe for the past 2 years or so, maybe three, there hasn't really been a serious violent event. So I think on that note, maybe the law enforcement presence is doing better in controlling that aspect. But when it comes to local city officials and local law enforcement officials in Tybee Island, I'm not exactly sure which route they can take to make this either go away, to make it go away.
You know what will be interesting is to do some best practice studies. Obviously, we have a lot of cities that are seaside cities within a couple hundred miles of here who deal with spring break every year and deal with large congregations of young people and college students, and be interesting to hear kind of how they deal with it, what their approach is, and whether they have the same response or the same approach to trying to control it or dissuade it or encourage it or profit off of it or what have you. Because it really is, I mean, obviously, you think about Daytona or Panama City Beach, they're dealing with it for weeks at a time. And and most of the people that come there are staying at the hotels there, where I think Orange Crush, they're coming in the day of and they're leaving the day of. But it would really be interesting to me to do a little compare and contrast of those kind of events.
Yeah, because Panama City Beach, I went my freshman year of college. I mean, it was thousands of students out there. And I guess because they know that's where their destination for spring break, I think Panama City might play into it more. They bring in some huge celebrities. I think at that time, DJ Polly D from Jersey Shore came out, and it was a really good time, and it was safe. And we knew that law enforcement officials were out there by the masses, and it kind of helped contain anything that might have gotten out of control. So I definitely think it works for Panama City.
Well, the discussion will be ongoing, I'm sure.
Of course.
We have the aftermath, and then it'll go away for a little bit, and then it'll come back probably next April. And we'll have the same discussions again. But thank you for coming in and giving your insights.
No problem. Thank you for having me.
Next year, I want you to go, and I want you to come back and bring us the full firsthand account.
Firsthand experience, of course. Definitely.
Time now for the Freedom Boat Club read. You know, Zach, Tom McCarthy and Steve Sherman over at Freedom, they don't provide me any marketing copy to read for their business. Guess it's pretty fortunate for them that I love their product. Freedom Boat Club allows you to enjoy recreational boating without having to do any of the work that comes with boat ownership. You buy a membership, not a boat, which means I show up at the marina, grab my cooler and sunscreen, walk onto the dock and onto the boat. And when I leave, I tie off at the fuel dock, grab that cooler and sunscreen, and head for the car. That's it. If this sounds like something you're interested in, contact Freedom's Steve Sherman at 912-226-2617 or visit freedomboatclub.com and complete the information request form. Mention this podcast and receive a free hat and t-shirt combo just for calling. Again, that phone number is 912-226-2617 and the website is freedomboatclub.com. Freedom Boat Club, get on the water today. We turn now from thoughts of a fun weekend on the water to a weightier topic, political redistricting. As some know, the once-a-decade census process is underway, and come early 2021, the count will be in. Not long after that, the Georgia legislature will meet for a special session and draw new boundaries for federal congressional districts as well as state legislative districts, both the House and the Senate. Anyone who has ever looked at a congressional district map of Georgia knows that this is a highly politicized process, with whichever party is in power taking steps to protect their power. The League of Women Voters has helped lead efforts in this state to change the law and take redistricting duties away from the legislatures and put it in the hands of an independent commission. This approach has been adopted in other states in recent years. Chris Carson, the League's national president, is in Savannah today to talk about redistricting at the League's state convention.
Nonpartisan commissions that draw lines, what are some of the tripwires, or what are some of the we all understand the advantages, but what is, aside from politicization, what is really kind of keeping that from gaining any momentum?
Well, in California, of course, we have a truly independent commission. The legislature does not have anything to do with it. We have really strict conflict of interest laws that look back into your, I think, 10 years.
Oh, is that right?
And as well as forward ones where you cannot run for office. You can't take an appointment on a major commission for 5 or 10 years in the future. Mm-hmm. It's so that, you know, get on the commission, draw yourself
right.
a district, or
right.
draw your friend a district,
right.
and then he or she will point you to something really cool.
Yeah. Kind of like a legislator becoming a lobbyist.
Right? Yeah, right, exactly. And certainly there are things like no lobbyist can be on it, and it extends out to your immediate family.
Mm-hmm.
But getting away from that, I don't know whether you could do an independent commission in Georgia, and really, it's what fits the state.
Mm-hmm.
I think that I'm talking off the top of my head here, if you had really good criteria, everybody understood, you know, you will do this in ranked order, like equal population, respect for the Voting Rights Act, respect for communities of interest, because that's really important to keep communities together.
Mm-hmm.
That sort of thing. And if you had transparency, if you knew who, in California, what they did was all the map lines were drawn in public. Nobody was allowed to go behind closed doors. And they had massive public hearings all around the state, which were televised and everything. And anybody could come and suggest, I'd like it to look like this, including the parties, but you had to do it in public.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody knew, and then the draft maps were drawn in public, and everybody could watch, and they said, we're doing it this way because, and at the end of the day, everybody knew why the maps were drawn the way they were, and you may not have been happy, because, you know, I want the line on this street instead of that street,
right.
but they knew why the line was drawn there, and
right.
so you may not have been utterly thrilled with where you were, but you knew it wasn't the result of a corrupt deal.
Right. And the lines looked, I assume, not squiggly and gerrymandered and stuff like
right.
that. In this state, it looked more regional.
It was regional. I mean, and, you know, there's a whole section of California where there's not many people, so you have this huge district.
Right. Right.
And then, of
the
course,
desert,
like,
farmland,
as, yeah,
right.
right. And the mountains. But then, like, in places, the big urban areas, say, like, the equivalent of Atlanta, you have a lot of districts
mm-hmm.
because of equal population.
Mm-hmm.
And that was because you had to follow, you know, I mean, sometimes it does have to be mountains or rivers
right.
or
right, right.
or
natural
yeah.
boundaries.
But sometimes it crosses the political boundaries because just that's the way things are.
Yeah, that's how the population breaks down.
Yeah. And you may find that, you know, the outlying areas of a big urban area are better off with the suburban that's next door because they share
yeah.
common interests.
Common
and so,
yeah.
you know, it's, you can get obsessed with strict boundaries
right.
and not looking at, as we say, communities of interest, neighborhoods, towns, agricultural interests. In California, environmental concern over water, the use of water. We had a situation where groups came in. It was a very Republican area. They wanted to be separate because one group used water for agriculture and another group used water for recreation.
Yeah.
And they felt that they would be better off in districts where they had representatives who understood that. They could do that.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
So those meetings had to be, you didn't know what to expect a lot of times in those meetings.
The commission came, people came, stood in line for hours to talk. They'd come in, they'd say, this is what we want. They'd hand, give them hand, print out a Google map, and they'd take markers and say, here's what we want. And they put that all over California. They just put it together. I mean, the community across California told them what they wanted it to look like. And, of course, then they had balance, you know. But they ended up with, at the end of it, they knew what people across California wanted and, what, more importantly, what they didn't want.
Right.
And so they were able to put it together in a way that satisfied the laws.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, gave people the kind of districts that they wanted.
You talked about commission members and what they didn't want. What were they looking for in commission members? Were they looking for people with political experience? Were they looking for people with...
Anybody could apply as long as you met the... And we had over 34,000 people apply. And then,
Wow, the vetting process.
Yes, and it was a very clear vetting process. The state auditor's office appointed, and they went through, and then the top group was interviewed on television so that everybody could see who they were. And you wanted people. We were looking for people, very diverse group, who had experience of California because, you know, it's a big state and there's the regions. We didn't want people who had no political experience, who were naive, and we wanted people who, as we said, played well together.
Right. You need
people who can, and we had a very, very diverse commission in terms of their political views and their racial and ethnic, but they played well together. They got along, and they were able to sink their personal opinion into working together. I mean, you don't want somebody who doesn't know anything about the political process.
Right.
You just want someone who can step away from...
from the outside influence.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Have we seen a big... because of that, have we seen a big shift in the representation? I mean, it's stuff that used to be always up... represented by one party, we've seen shifts?
Well, it's twofold. They created what we call swing districts, mm-hmm. where the registration was such that in order to run, they had to start appealing to the center.
Yes, that was my next question. I figured you had more centrist.
And then you had... And some of the district would swing back and forth because, you know, our assembly lower house is every 2 years, the state senate is every 4 years. You could watch it if somebody went off, you know, the next time around somebody else would get elected. But what we also saw is that the pressure, okay, now you're in there, now you need to deliver on not just going there and arguing.
Right.
And so... a small group in the legislature had started what they call a bipartisan caucus. Once we got that started to build, and the representatives made a commitment to work together on bills. They started with a bill to get a kill button on your cell phone, figuring they could at least get together on that, and that's built out from there.
Right.
More and more, and in this last election, we saw, you know, pressure from constituents on both sides saying, well, like, you got to tell me why you did that, and,
right.
you know, you have to listen to me.
Right. As the state house and then the congressional caucus from the state, congressional delegation, have they become more efficient, more effective?
Certainly the legislature mm-hmm. has become more efficient. And the interesting thing is that when we elected Congress this time, some of the districts flipped, and they were swing districts because this is going to sound partisan, but this is political reality. They were quote unquote Republican districts, but they weren't very right wing. They were old-time centrist.
Yeah, traditional.
Traditional Republicans, and they were fed up with their very right-wing, so they they said they elected Democrats. Well, some of them were Republicans who had switched registration. No, they had just switched parties.
Oh, they had switched parties.
And they just announced, look, you know,
I identify more with this now.
And the people who were elected are, I would say, right of center. They're not the stereotypical left wing at all. They're right of center. But the point is, they represent what the people in their district think and want.
Yeah. As you say that, because it's interesting, as somebody who lives in Georgia, when I think of Congress persons from California, I think of Pelosi and Waters, right?
Mm-hmm.
And but those are they're more the outliers.
Yeah. Well, because you've got Katie Porter, Katie Hill. You've got a number of them who are, or even some of the ones who are ranking. They're not left wing. I mean, somebody like Adam Schiff is and always has been a blue dog Democrat.
Mm-hmm.
Very focused on business. On he comes from a district that's media, you know, he's got
right.
Warners and Disney and everything. I mean,
right. He
really focused on the needs of both the entertainment industry, but also the very large number of small businesses
who feed all that thing,
yeah. You know, whether they're not. He's and a number of them, they're blue dog Democrats,
yeah.
Is what you used to call them. I don't know what they call them now.
Right.
But the new class, part of the group that's joined in California, they're not the stereotypical at all.
When you look at our political climate today, and there's a lot of people that think it's as bad or worse or whatever, that we're in crisis now. Redistricting looks like something that could maybe return some sanity, properly done, something that could return sanity to politics. Is it? It's probably just a step. Though.
A step. Right. But yes, in the sense, well, this is going to sound pie in the sky, but this is what we found in California. One of the biggest victories we had with the independent redistrict, the new way of redistricting, is the restoration of public trust.
Okay.
People can look at their legislature and say, I don't like that.
That's the biggest problem we have
but
right there.
But I know they're not there as the result of a corrupt deal.
Okay.
And, but beyond that, It's we always say, you know, voters should choose their representatives. Their representatives should not pick and choose their own voters. And when you elect people who are from their district, and people know that they're there not because they paid or anything, I think it makes a difference.
Thanks for listening to the Friday Commute. We appreciate our guests, Asha Gilbert and Chris Carson, for taking the time to speak with us. And a big thank you to our sponsors, National Office Systems and Freedom Boat Club. Please support them as they support this podcast. To enjoy more local news content, subscribe to the Savannah Morning News. Right now, we have a special digital subscription offer. New customers get 1 month's access to SavannahNow.com for free and pay just $7.99 a month for a year after that. We'll talk to you again Monday.